fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. The 17th edition of the World Indoor Athletics Championships came to an end in Birmingham in England on Sunday. In the past two decades, the competition has grown to become a significant yardstick of the international scene. Among many impressive performances, none shone more than the double gold of Ethiopia's Genzebe Dibaba. The energetic Andy Edwards reflects on her achievement and what the competition in general promises for the outdoor season.
Genzebe Dibaba was as dominant in winning the 1500 meters on Friday as she had been in taking the 3000 the day before. The Ethiopian now has five world indoor titles, and only a certain Maria Mutola of Mozambique has more, with her tally of seven. Dibaba is already the outdoor world record holder for 1500 and, straight after celebrating her indoor double, set out her aim for an attack on the 5,000 metre mark, held by her sister, Tirunesh.
My plan is in 5,000. Maybe I try world record, yes.
The African success wasn't confined to the longer distances. Muriel Ahure led the way in the greatest ever performance for Ivory Coast sprinters as she won the 60 metres with her compatriot Marie-José Talou second.
I wasn't surprised. I mean, I ran the times in practice, but I was just so happy that I was able to put three perfect races together and then finally do it here, because it only counts if the world sees it, not when you're running, in an indoor gymnasium in Houston, Texas. So I'm just so excited to be able to have done it.
The men's 60 was won in dramatic style by the USA's Christian Coleman. Having broken the world record last month, Coleman produced the second fastest time ever with 6.37. His performance at the 100 outdoors will generate big media attention. The field events offered high quality throughout, and South Africa's Luvo Manyonga, the world outdoor champion, looked to be heading for victory when he cleared 8 metres 44 in round three. But Spain's Juan Miguel Echevarria denied him, leaving Manyonga with the silver and looking forward to the outdoor season.
At the competition, you never know until the competition is finished, which is the best, you know, but I'm quite happy with the performance, you know. I was looking forward to get a gold medal, but it didn't come. But I'm quite excited about the outdoor. There will be flames.
Form guides don't always prove accurate, and Will Clay of the USA had been struggling for the past few months. The Olympic and World Triple Jump silver medalist only scraped into the US team for these championships, but everything came good with 17 metres 43 for the gold medal.
This year has been rough. You know, I've only been able to jump once at practice since October. And then I jumped at U.S. Nationals and then now here. So, you know, it's still knocking off the rust. You know, I'm still a little rusty with my technique and my form. But thank God I was able to still come out with a gold medal.
The USA team consistently reaps a rich harvest of medals at these championships. And Birmingham was no exception, with the world outdoor record holder Kenny Harrison winning the women's high hurdles and Courtney Okolo taking the women's 400 among their honours. But teammate AJ Wilson had to settle for silver, as Burundi's Francine Niyonsaba won their duel in the 800 metres, as she did 2 years ago.
Today it was not easy, but I did everything I have to do, so I'm so happy. I won a medal, and it is my medal and my country. I'm so happy to defend my title.
Sunday's closing session continued to produce numerous high-quality performances, including an epic men's pole vault, where Renaud Lavillenie of France retained the title, beating the USA's outdoor world champion Sam Kendricks. And there was another silver for the USA, as Britain's Andrew Pozzi beat Jarrett Eaton in the 60-metre hurdles. After a succession of injuries, the Briton won his first global title and looked ahead to the European Championships in Berlin in August.
You know, I always believed that I could win global medals and win global titles, and to have it reinforced tonight is just incredible. I'm very much looking forward to the European Championships in Berlin this summer. It's going to be incredibly competitive, and I think it's going to deliver a great championships.
Just to show that racing certainties can be anything but that, the championships closed with the Polish men overhauling the USA on the last leg of the 4x400 meters relay, breaking the world record held by the Americans into the bargain. The Polish squad looked as shocked as anyone in the arena. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards at the World Indoor Athletics Championships in Birmingham.
Thanks, Andy. We enjoyed your coverage from Birmingham. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to New York City, where World Boxing Council heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder of the USA successfully defended his title over the weekend. Jonah Haskell reports from New York.
One more name can now be added to the list of men who Deontay Wilder has knocked out in the ring. On Saturday night in Brooklyn, Wilder, the WBC heavyweight champion of the world, successfully defended his title, knocking out Cuban challenger Luis Ortiz in the 10th round with a vicious right-handed uppercut. The knockout was the culmination of a comeback by Wilder, who had started the fight slow and fallen behind on the scorecard. Neither fighter was aggressive in those early rounds, but while Wilder mainly used weak, inaccurate jabs to find his distance, Ortiz was able to land a few strong blows, hurting the champ and opening up a scoring lead. But the turning point was coming. In the 7th, Ortiz pummeled Wilder, pushing him against the ropes and enveloping the bronze bomber in a flurry of combinations that seemed sure to end the fight. But somehow, Wilder stayed up and was able to wobble back to his corner after being saved by the bell at the end of the round. Afterwards, he said he wasn't in as bad shape as it looked.
I wasn't hurt. I was in a whirlwind, you know. I never thought Ortiz had power. I said that before. You know, he had me in that whirlwind. I was trying to get out of that tornado. You know what I mean? I mean, he put a lot of punches combination together well.
Wilder was able to steady the ship in the 8th, holding his own long enough to recover from the onslaught of the previous round, and he went on the offensive in the 10th, storming back to drop Ortiz to the canvas once in the round before the eventual knockout blow. Ortiz, who spoke through a translator post-fight, was disappointed to be caught off guard and let an opportunity slip away.
He could have gone more, but with a person like Wilder, you can't just go crazy. And he thinks that's what happened, and he just got too comfortable. Got too comfortable, and he just didn't respect him, and he got caught with a punch.
It was the first career loss for the 38-year-old Luis King Kong Ortiz, who drops to a still impressive record of 28-1. Wilder, meanwhile, remained undefeated and is now sitting pretty with a career record of 40 wins and no losses, along with 39 knockouts. It remains to be seen where each fighter will go from here. Wilder has been vocal about wanting to fight British heavyweight and IBF, IBO, and WBA belt holder Anthony Joshua in a title unification bout for the ages, but there's also been talk of a rematch between Ortiz and Wilder. No matter what happens, you can bet Deontay Wilder will feel confident about it.
I got a heart of a lion, man, and that's just what it is. You know, I tell people all the time, I'd rather be the part than look the part, and I showed that tonight. It's not about weight. It's not how big a person is. It's not about all the different things that people, you know, get so wrapped up in their mind about boxing. You know, boxing is a beautiful sport. It's a sweet science to this, and it's all about who got the bigger heart. And tonight I showed I had the bigger heart, and I solidified myself at the top as the baddest man on the planet.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Jonah Haskell in New York. Now back to Sonny Young in Washington.
Thanks, Jonah. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Joining us now from Abuja, Nigeria, with a package of African sports news is reporter Samson Omale. And Samson says he'll be kicking off with African Club Football's premier tournament. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin with the CAF Champions League Round 1 first leg matches scheduled for Tuesday 6th and Wednesday 7th March 2018. Mo Nana of Gabon will travel to Egypt to face Al Ahly, while Horoya of Guinea will host Generation Food from Senegal. Young Africans of Tanzania will face Township Rollers of Botswana in Tanzania, while Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia will welcome Debutant Plateau United of Nigeria. 12 matches have been slated to be played on Wednesday. The aggregate winner after the return matches will book a spot in the recreative group stage of Africa's Premium Club competition. And now to women's football. The Moroccan city of Marrakesh will be the center of attraction from the 5th to the 7th of March 2018 for the first ever CAF Women's Football Symposium. The two-day event under the theme Raising Our Game is expected to chart a new course for the development of women's football on the continent. It will also define the future of the women's game as various stakeholders discuss, exchange ideas and knowledge towards raising the standard. Paul Put has been named head coach of Guinea, replacing Mohamed Kamfouri Bongura. The Belgian's appointment was announced at a press conference in Conakry at the weekend. Away from football news, Simidele Adeife Omonola Adebo is a Nigerian skeleton racer who competed at the just-concluded 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. She is Nigeria and Africa's first female skeleton athlete, as well as the first black female athlete in the sport of skeleton. Simidele says being the first black female athlete in the sport of skeleton is a fulfillment of a dream she will cherish in a long time to come.
Pyeongchang was really amazing. I mean, for me, it was the fulfillment of a lifelong dream. And I think to be able to make history for Nigeria was extra special. So I just enjoyed every moment and had fun with it. About 5 months ago, I tried out for skeleton and started the skeleton journey, and here I am.
Egyptian Omar Assar and Dina Masharaf are the champion of the 2018 International Table Tennis African Top 16 Cup held in Nairobi, Kenya. To emerge as the new men's champion on Sunday, Omar Assar had to dig deep to beat Nigeria's Arna Quadri 4-3 in the entertaining explosive final. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The 90th Academy Awards for Film Excellence were held Sunday night in Los Angeles, California. And a basketball great who starred for one of the NBA clubs in Los Angeles was among those honored. Joining us now with more details is my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Here's the headline on ESPN's Twitter page. Make it 5 rings and 1 Oscar for Kobe Bryant. Yes, Kobe usually wins top awards for excellence in sports, but now he's won the biggest award in America's film industry. Last night, Kobe was given the Oscar for Best Animated Short for his film Dear Basketball, and a couple of legends in basketball were watching. Former Laker great Irvin Magic Johnson expressed his enthusiasm on Twitter, writing, "Congratulations to my good friend Kobe Bryant for winning the Oscar for Best Animated Short Film. Well deserved." And King James took a moment to write, "Salute Kobe Bryant on that Oscar. Hashtag, we are more than shut up and dribble." To that hashtag, a couple of weeks ago, I told you about a social media firestorm that erupted between LeBron James and TV talk show host Laura Ingraham when she reacted to LeBron's political statements by saying players like LeBron should just shut up and dribble. Well, during last night's acceptance speech, Kobe took a shot at Ingraham, saying, "As basketball players, we're really supposed to shut up and dribble, but I'm glad we do a little bit more than that." Many Twitter followers were quite happy about Kobe's win, as well as that portion of his speech. This tweeter wrote, "Kobe has transitioned effectively from basketball very quickly. Always happy to see a brother prove he's not some dumb jock who can't think outside the sports arena. Athletes will not be silenced." Kobe also thanked the Academy for the award and also those who were involved in the film. And then he thanked his family in Italian. Here's what one Twitter follower had to say about that. "Don't know too many players that have won 5 rings, be able to speak multiple languages, and now also an Oscar winner. Wow, he may not be the greatest of all time in basketball, but tell me when Michael Jordan and LeBron James win a freaking Oscar," and rattle off in Italian. may be the most impressive resume overall. But there were some followers who were not as enthusiastic about Kobe's win. Many reminded us that in 2003, Kobe was arrested and charged with sexual assault. The case was later dropped when his accuser refused to testify in court, but for some, Kobe's reputation has remained tarnished. Many Twitter comments read along this line: "I think Kobe Bryant is an amazing basketball player. I also think he raped that girl and got away with it because he's an amazing basketball player. Both things can exist as the truth." And this tweet: "Kobe Bryant joins a long line of men who have both won an Oscar and have been accused of rape." But there were also Twitter followers who chose to separate the man from the accomplishment itself, like this one: "This is big for basketball and the art that it brings off the court. You never know what you might accomplish. Hashtag, we all should challenge our inner talent." And followers like this one were inspired by Kobe's ability to reinvent himself. It reads, "I just want to say Kobe has been a great inspiration to me throughout my life and probably many others as well. His dedication to his craft is amazing. He's the definition of a hard worker, a great competitor, and now a great storyteller. Congratulations, Kobe Bryant. Much deserved." Kobe Bryant's film is based on a love letter he wrote to basketball when he announced his retirement from the NBA. There are plenty of pictures posted on Twitter with Kobe looking lovingly at the statue with the biggest grin on his face. It is reported that Kobe said backstage after his win, quote, "I feel better than winning a championship." Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The International Association of Athletics Federations, or IAAF, is trying to do a better job when it comes to preserving the history of the sport. To find out more, the energetic Andy Edwards spoke with a top IAAF administrator at the just-concluded World Indoor Championships in Birmingham, England. Here's Andy.
I'm at the World Indoor Athletics Championships in Birmingham, in the heart of England, with Chris Turner. And many of those in the media will know Chris's name. He's been a leading administrator in the IAAF for many years. And he's got a new role. He's in charge of the IAAF Heritage Launch, which is taking place during these World Indoor Championships. So, athletics, the IAAF, and history. Chris, tell me more. What's the concept of this project?
Basically, athletics, and particularly the IAAF, has not been the greatest preserver of our past. You look at a lot of sports, they've got museums, they very much interact and project their sport through their past names. You think of the Olympic history, and I was born in 64, I grew up in the 70s, so for me, you take Spitz out of it, you say take Corbett and maybe Comaneci. The rest of their history is athletics. The Olympic movement is very good at promoting itself from that, but athletics has done nothing, really. So the initial concept is to try and find ways, maybe it's a museum, maybe it's travelling exhibitions, to use our past to promote our future, effectively.
Have you been going around current athletes and athletes now retired asking for memorabilia, you know, your shoes, your kit, this is what you wore when you won the gold?
We have had one little dress rehearsal at this because in 2012 we had our centenary, and I was being the total idiot of this this sport, the real anorak as we say in England. I was seconded for a whole year to put on the centenary celebrations, which included a two-month exhibition in the Olympic Museum in Barcelona. And there, and you're exactly right, I basically called in all my contacts, all the great athletes of the past, the agents I've been working with in communications. And you're quite right, I've been in this for quite a long time now. I was working out certainly way over a quarter of a century, pulling in all those contacts. And most of these people have their medals and their vests and their spikes in their spare bedroom, underneath a bed. They want to show it to the world. They want to have that opportunity. So that the people, they just want to loan things to us.
The headquarters of the IAAF is in Monaco. Is the plan to have a museum there, or will there be any possibility for, I mean, it strikes me, a kind of little tour, like when you have a championship coming to a city, a chance to see at least a mobile exhibition of the IAAF and athletics world heritage.
The project, which I've amazingly convinced our council, is a four-year project which will end with a museum in Monte Carlo. And the principality have basically intimated they would offer us a building for that. They're very interested. They've got a very good museum network anyway. But what struck me really was in 2016 we had our congress in Monaco. Now, the IAAF has been in Monaco, moving from London, in 1994. In that period, we worked out about 70% of the federations, unless they had a member on our council or on a commission, have never once visited Monte Carlo. So I thought, we must seem very, very aloof to somebody in Papua New Guinea, somebody, I don't know, in Belarus, who can never actually get to Monaco. So, yeah, we want this lovely museum there, but you're quite right, we want to take our heritage to our member federations, to area events, to IAAF events. It's no good us just sitting back in Monaco and say, hey, come in 20 years' time and see this. So it's a dual purpose, physical museum, prestige, but also take our past to our members.
I think it's fair to say in recent years there's a lot of talk about presentation of athletics. I mean, everybody agrees, I feel, that football is the number one sport in terms of interest, spectator appeal, media coverage. So all the other sports, including even the number one Olympic sport, athletics, feels under pressure. So could this also be a way of, well, it may not be the main way, but of showing the public, hey, this is a sport, not just if you go to see a track meeting now, but it's got background.
Yeah, very much so. You know, it's also about, we're talking about encouraging the young people to engage with your sport. Back in 72, as an 8-year-old, I sat on the couch and watched the Olympics with my brothers. In 72, unless I'd been watching the Olympics or gone out on my bike or playing the street, there were no other distractions. We now have generations who have so many other possibilities of what they're going to do in their life. So this is part to engage, to get that interest in our sport, to actually say, you've been watching Usain Bolt. Well, before Usain Bolt, there was Carl Lewis. Before that, there was Harrison Dillard or Jesse Owens. And giving that connection, but also talking about the backstories. You know, that's a very well-used phrase now, but you know the stories of some of our great talents, our great legends, are quite extraordinary. And I think if you're going to inspire, and that's another well-used phrase, but if you're going to inspire people to be interested in your sport, something which is seen as very traditional, hasn't really changed very much, that's the way of doing it. And heritage's main purpose is that.
Well, I think everybody, not just media, but fans, and perhaps people who just see athletics every 4 years in the Olympics will think, this is a really interesting project. Chris Turner, we wish you and the IAAF Heritage all the best for the launch and for the future. Be watching it with great interest. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks very much, Andy.
And thanks to the energetic Andy Edwards for that interview with Chris Turner of the IAAF. And Andy and Chris spoke at the IAAF World Indoor Championships in Birmingham, England. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Major League Soccer kicked off its 23rd season with 23 teams over the weekend. One of the MLS storylines as the new season gets underway, a new club in Los Angeles. LAFC is the league's newest club and will play at Bank of California Stadium, a 22,000-seat venue that officially opens April 29th and costs $350 million to build. This gives the Los Angeles area two MLS clubs. The five-time MLS champion Los Angeles Galaxy also play their home games in Southern California. Here in Washington, the MLS club DC United will also be playing at a new venue this season. Audi Field is scheduled to open July 14th. The 20,000-seat capacity venue is located not far from our Voice of America headquarters and is two blocks from Nationals Park, the home stadium of Major League Baseball's Washington Nationals Club. And that wraps up the March 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Bill Andrade. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nigeria's democratic political process got a boost recently with help provided by the United States. U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria Stuart Symington joined more than 40 prominent Nigerian politicians and International Republican Institute, or IRI, President Daniel Twining to launch a new activity supported by the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, to help political parties adopt better governance practices and improve the quality of political discourse. Implemented for USAID by IRI and Search for Common Ground, the three-year, $5.5 million responsive political party program will help the major national political parties in Nigeria improve responsiveness to their constituents. It will also contribute to creating peaceful participation ahead of the upcoming elections. The activity promises to help parties contesting the upcoming elections to become more representative of the citizenry and improve the oversight of government programs. It also aims to increase the frequency and intensity of political party interactions with their constituents, improve communication among party officials, candidates, and office holders at all levels, and boost the participation of marginalized groups in political processes and within the parties themselves. The Responsive Political Party Program will also help spread the message of peace and nonviolence through the electoral process, determine early warning signs of electoral violence, and formulate strategies to mitigate potential violence through conflict assessment in conjunction with political parties and civil society organizations. Working with IRI on this project, our parties will be stronger and more efficient, vibrant and responsive to the yearnings of Nigerians, Deputy Senate President Ike Ekweremadu remarked. I assure you of the cooperation of the National Assembly towards the actualization of this noble initiative. If you seek to be followed, tell the story not only of what is wrong, but what you would do right for the future, Ambassador Symington told the assembled politicians. And the greatest right you can do is to inspire your members to come together and make Nigeria better.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, my friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Next Monday, nails and beauty. This is next Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, voters in Sierra Leone go to the polls on March 7th to elect a new president, parliament and local councils. President Ernest Bai Koroma is stepping down after serving two terms. His presidency faced the Ebola outbreak and allegations of corruption. An in-depth discussion on the most pressing issues facing Sierra Leone. On the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.